Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Hey guys, it's that time again. And that time is the time to feature metal raps here on The Talking Metal RSS feed. So today's episode is Metal Raps episode 35. It's Talking Metal episode 640. Man, I'm slammed with episodes. I'm actually falling behind. I have an episode I recorded like a week ago with Bill Wang, a.k.a. Donnie G from the old days, as my co-host. I got to get that up. I think actually during that episode I referred to it as episode 640, but then we recorded Metal Raps last night, and I was like, you know what, I want to put this out in the Talking Metal feed, and the Metal Rap stuff, what it tends to happen, if I don't post it immediately, it becomes suddenly outdated because it's so topical, you know, so... So here you go. You're going to get the most recent episode of Metal Raps today. Of course, Metal Raps has its own feed. If you really love the show and you don't want to miss an episode, I suggest going to iTunes and subscribing to the Metal Raps feed, because I don't put every episode out over this Talking Metal feed, if any of that makes sense. You know, you get the picture. You can also go to talkingmetal.com and go to the Metal Raps section and make sure you're all caught up on all the Metal Raps episodes. I feel like these only have a couple-day lifespan, because in 3 days, everything we're talking about on this episode is probably going to be, not everything, but a lot of the stuff we talk about tends to be outdated. That's, you know, typical with Metal Raps. So I try to rush them up all the time. But yeah, definitely stay tuned to Talking Metal, because we also have a great episode coming up with this guy Jeff Pizzuti, who is the mastermind behind the Dio hologram. He says some cool stuff, so definitely stay tuned for that. And yeah, thanks for always sticking with me here on Talking Metal. Use our Amazon links. I would love a PayPal donation, and be great if you guys could pick those up again. Used to be so good with those. Not so much anymore, but I love when I do get them, so definitely consider leaving a PayPal donation. And we're sold out of the Talking Metal t-shirts, thanks to you guys, I appreciate that. All 100 Talking Metal t-shirts sold after only 8 years, we sold all of them, so I don't know if I'm going to get more. I'm kind of leaning against it right now, but yeah, who knows, maybe one day we will. So you guys are the greatest. Hit me up on Twitter. Let me know what you think of this episode. Or check me out on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. And for sure, absolutely for sure, because I'm going to get to more of these calls in an upcoming episode, leave me a message on the hotline. That number is 973-757-1917. All right, enough yapping. Here's Metal Raps.
Well, hey there, and welcome to episode number 35 of Metal Raps. My name is Mitch Joel, and as always, I am joined by Talking Metal's Mark Striegel. Mark, how's it going?
Good, Mitch. How you doing?
Good. And of course, we are with One-on-One with Mitch LaFons. Mitch LaFon. Hey, Mitch.
Good day. Pleasure to be here.
So I think we should start off with big is that Guns N' Roses is going to be heading out on the road. It's happening. We knew it was happening for a while. There were billboards cropping up like crop circles, I guess, all over different cities with different sort of Guns N' Roses lyrics and song titles. Patience, Welcome to the Jungle, Are You Ready, blah, blah, blah. I'm not even surprised about this. I mean, I'd be surprised if they weren't touring. This is a band that they were generating. I mean, one of you guys will know better than I would, but it's somewhere in the range of, what, $5 million a gig. If things are going well, band is feeling healthy. We know for sure Axl's sounding better than ever based off of the AC/DC gigs we've seen and the GNR gigs we've seen. And why wouldn't they release a string of dates and hit cities? Mark, you're surprised. I'm not surprised.
I'm not surprised. What would surprise me is if they keep trying to do stadiums, but it seems like maybe they're going to pull back a little from that and be doing arenas and stuff like that, which is still in today's times just an amazing accomplishment to be filling arenas. But I think it's great. And there's been a little break here in the States and North America from Guns, and I'm ready to see more. I was even telling Mitchell Fawn I might even try to get up there to your neck of the woods to catch the show up there, depending on when it comes.
Our show in Montreal is not coming to what I thought was going to happen at the Bell Centre, but we're going to see them at Parc Jean-Drapeau, which was the venue of Heavy Montreal, an outdoor venue. So, Mitch, are you surprised that they're touring? Two, are you surprised they're playing that venue?
No and no. And in fact, most of the dates that have been announced are going to be sort of the outdoor stadiums, TD Place in Ottawa and the Edmonton, wherever the Eskimos play. I forget the name of that stadium. But no, I'm not surprised at all. You know, listen, I've had a chance to hear all kinds of great things over the last 6 months, and it appears to me that 2017 will just be nonstop touring cycle for the band. And like you said, why would they stop? You know, the response has been great, the money's been coming in, the band is sounding great. I haven't heard anything or haven't seen anything in the press of people hating each other or wanting. It just seems to be everything's in heaven right now. So,
Do we need new music to keep going with this, though?
No. Listen, I don't. You know, at this point,
have we not waited and been punished long enough with Chinese democracy, Mark?
Yeah, well, there, you know, those rumors that they were doing new stuff with Slash. I don't know if they were ever officially confirmed, but
well, I guess we'll find out eventually, yeah. Right? But no, I think like Kiss and like Metallica and like all these bands, they can put their name on a marquee and do the Heritage Act thing, and nobody needs it, right? I mean, most new music is pee breaks, as Dee Snider famously says, right?
So, my sentiment, I guess my only disappointment with this is the fact that it will be these sort of festival-like outdoor venues. There's just something about this show for me, especially after seeing AC/DC in an arena, not a stadium with Axl, that I was really hoping it would be more of an arena show, more intimate. And, you know, I think the lighting and the experience feels better when it's more enclosed. Sound, obviously, is a lot better. So I'm sort of hopeful that, you know, they get this out of their system and then they start playing smaller venues. And I don't know if that's me getting old. I think back in the day, you used to pray that your favorite band would play this stadium and be as big as whomever at the time. And now to me, it's, you know, the more intimate, the better, the more opportunities I have to be up close and personal or hear them really pounding, the better. And just by the clips I've seen online on YouTube, because I have not seen this iteration of GNR Live, I just really was hopeful they were going to play arenas. So my fingers are crossed that the tour goes exceedingly well. Health remains, mental health remains. They remain serious about the gigs and performing and delivering on them, but that eventually I would really love nothing more than to see this band in an arena. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Well, I think we will. I think we'll see that in the fall or maybe early next next winter. And I think a lot of the festival stuff or the sort of the bigger venues also has to do with the promoters, especially in the States. They build a lot of these outdoor sheds and they need to fill them throughout the summer. So they'll take anything to throw in there. I'm not sure if that's how it works with the Canadian promoters, but I really think that it's sort of partly what the band wants and mostly what the promoters want is to fill these venues that they can only use for 4 or 5 months a year.
And while they've made this announcement, I haven't had a chance to check the news. What do we know about opening bands? Is this multiple acts? Is this just them? Does anybody have any insight on that? I literally have not seen the press.
I have zero information on that. As of right now, I have zero information. But on the last leg or the last tour, they sort of had, you know, The Cult and Lenny Kravitz and Billy
Alice
Talent
and a whole bunch.
Alice in Chains. I think that's probably the best bet for them is to just bring on these bands that especially speak to local markets. You know, doing the States, Europe, and Canada on this one, I expect on the Canadian dates to see Canadian bands and on the European dates to see European bands. And then in the States, you sort of get whatever's available. And that's what I'm thinking is going to happen. We'll find out in the next couple of days easily.
Adjunct to that, there's been stuff happening in the metal news community around Steven Adler, the original drummer. He's been making pit stops on the tour, playing a couple songs here and there. He himself has been releasing videos here and there. The most recent one was the fact that he can play up to 2 hours, and I'm not sure why that... I mean, I understand why that may have been a question because he's not on this tour. If he can play the 2 hours, why isn't he on the tour with the band? But I'm sort of – I don't know what I'm feeling, but I'm feeling this sentiment that now he maybe wanted to do more from day one. The band doesn't want him to do more. Who's got any opinion or story on this? Start with you, Mitch.
Yeah, you know, I think that he probably wanted to be with the band from the get-go, and they might be a bit reticent. I mean, you know, listen, going into this with a lot of the big money, there was a lot of question marks. Would Axl and Slash get along? Would this guy get along? Would Izzy come back? And I think they bet against Steven. I'm not sure they should have bet against Steven. He seems to be proving that he's capable. So, you know, let's hope that they can come out. Because, listen, they dragged him down to South America for a couple of shows. And both nights they had him play one song, which I don't want to say is insulting. But come on, if you're going to drag a guy 4,000 kilometers, at least give him, you know, four songs or six songs.
You think he'd know going down with the gig? I don't think you show up and it's like, hey, let's do this. I mean, he must have known what the gig was before he went to any of these gigs.
Well, I understood from my conversations is that he was expecting two songs at all these different shows, L.A. and I think Cincinnati and all that, and that I think he was expecting two songs in South America, and it didn't happen. Now, listen, I'm not going to talk for him. I'm not going to talk for Guns N' Roses, but that's certainly what I've understood. And so I think he's trying to prove to them that, listen, I can play these songs. Let's get off this one song, two song crumb stuff, and let's give me some meat on that bone, and let's get me doing half the set. And I think fans would dig it. Now, you know, economically, does it make sense? Is it going to sell more tickets? I don't know. I mean, you know, who knows, right? But as a fan, it certainly would be interesting to see him come out and do You Could Be Mine.
Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, I tell you, I feel bad for the guy. I mean, he's obviously wants to be a part of the reunion. He wants to be a full part of the band, in my opinion. This is just speculation on my part. And can you blame him? I mean, they're making millions of dollars. He has a chance to, you know, if he were in the band, he would have a chance to bring home a much bigger paycheck than he does not being in the band. It seems a little desperate to me for him to go and post these videos of him, you know, playing Use Your Illusion era songs or whatever. It seems like he's really crying out, and I think you know, I think he lost a lot of his drumming skill. We know that was way back. You know, if you remember when they recorded the song Civil War. They had to patch together the drum kit. He had drug problems. He really lost a lot of his musicianship. He made a comeback when he toured with Chips Enough and they were out there doing the Adler's Appetite stuff. He could play again. He can really play again. Frank Ferrer has said on record that he loves Steven Adler's sound on the Appetite for Destruction record. He has hailed him as really, you know, bringing the swing to the band. I think there's a number of things happening. I don't think Axl wants this to be a full out reunion. I think it's important for him and it justifies everything he did in the past 15 years without Slash, without Duff, without Steven Adler or Matt Sorum or Izzy Stradlin or any of these guys. It justifies what he did by keeping Frank Ferrer there, by keeping Richard Fortus there, by keeping 3 to 5 Guns N' Roses songs in this, or I'm sorry, Chinese Democracy songs in the set list. I don't think at this point, Axl, and I don't even know if Slash and Duff are interested in going out and doing an all-out reunion retro show, even if 95% of the people there are there to see those classic songs and only those classic songs. I just don't think they're going to go there. And I will say this on closing again, I feel for Steven Adler, but I think he's entering dangerous territory here by releasing these videos and crying out for what appears is that he's crying out for this gig in the press, because Axl is very sensitive to this stuff and he should have learned his lesson back when he got back in with Axl when they did the Vegas show and he was friendly with Axl and then he went off in the press on Axl. Axl's extremely sensitive to that stuff, and just him releasing these videos of him playing You Could Be Mine, I think is potentially a deal closer, and I personally will be surprised if you see him at any more Guns N' Roses shows. I think this may be it. I think he made a mistake by doing this.
I have two opinions on this. One is I'm really aligned with your thinking, Mark, in terms of just empathy for the guy. This is a tough deal. It's a tough deal to see this band that you went through. And then what he went through personally, you know, you talked a little bit of the drugs. He just had major health issues that were lingering, and he made this comeback, and he was able to do that whole Chips and Us stuff and Adler's Appetite. And there were question marks around cancel dates. A whole bunch of stuff there. So just as a human being, you feel like, God, you just want to, you know, I'm always root for the underdog.
Yeah, and he's the other side.
But the other side of it is, and again, this is maybe more the musician in me, and who am I to judge and say this guy's ready, this guy's not. I just do look at it and still go, well, this isn't just being able to play for 2 hours. This is a tour, and it's a tour where hundreds of millions of dollars are at stake. And I don't think it's about whether or not he can play for 2 hours sufficiently or efficiently, or whether Fortus thinks he can play or not. I think this is a big corporate machine that has to serve a lot of people, and there's a lot of expectations here. And my guess is, from an insurance standpoint, they're just mitigating risks at this point. And they probably did a check and balance and said, in order for us to really do this, is he in this shape? And whether or not he is or isn't, they made a call. I can't tell you by watching these videos that I thought, as a guy who just loves music, I thought, they're totally, why would they do this? I thought, well, you know, yeah, he can play, but can he do what it, you know, playing is only 2 hours of that night, of that long day, of that long tour. And so I was just in this, you know, again, just watching that for as a human being, just looking, I thought, yeah, he's great, but I'm not sure. But at the same time, you want it to happen. Really, anybody sitting here saying they don't want Steve Adler and Guns N' Roses. You want it to happen for all the right reasons and for it to be right. There's a lot of stuff happens behind the scenes in a lot of bands, guys, that there's a reason. And it's not all just personality.
No.
That's my sentiment.
No, you're absolutely right. It probably is mitigating risk for the insurance and all that stuff. But, you know, I don't think he's asking to be the full-time drummer. I think if anything, he's sort of hoping to not just have 2 songs and get it up to 5 or 6 or even half a set. Nothing prevents you from having Frank there on the side. And if for any reason, health or otherwise, he can't play, boom, Frank steps in. I think you can sort of have best of both worlds. I wouldn't call it a desperation. I think, you know, like Slash and Duff and everybody else, they all sort of got a second chance. And I think he's just sort of saying, hey, how about my second chance? And, you know, he probably deserves it. You know, why not?
Slash and Duff really did keep going with quite a prolific touring and recording schedule, each on their own, and just professionally their output and what they had done. And I, look, it's hard. It's hard when you have people at that scale and others who are, you know, playing clubs with cover bands. It's just a different vibe. But look, all of us wish him well. All of us want us to be successful.
And he can play drums. You know, he's great.
He can play.
He sounds great. You know, there's no question about that, I think, at this point.
Well, I mean, listen, my bottom line is that I want Guns N' Roses to be successful. I was very, very thrilled with the show I saw last year. The ones I'm going to see this summer, I think I'm going to be, you know, it's going to be the same thrill. And I would love to have that go through, you know, 2018, 2019. So whatever it takes, Slash and Axl are there. Keep it going. Let's get at least five more years.
And I'm happy to eat crow on my original comments and thrilled that the band is sounding great. And I'm happy that they're doing this and successful. And I'll for sure be at that show, hoping that it's as amazing as what I saw when Axl is fronting AC/DC.
It really is.
Another massive band heading out on the road. And I got to tell you, a band I love, I think a band we all love, is Metallica. Brand new album, Hardwired to Self-Destruct. It's killing in terms of sales. There is a huge buzz. And that's sort of the thing that I'm most excited about. Yes, I'm super excited that there's apparently going to be this massive world tour. I think that's great. I just feel that this band is doing everything right. And if you wanted to write a case study for other bands about how to do it in the modern age, which is surprising considering all the stuff this band got beaten up for, in particular the Lars and James and Napster saga, how well they've embraced digital, how smart they have been in launching this album in so many different formats, from box set vinyls down to deluxe, down to extra stuff when you do the digital download, to you know, even right now what's going on. Right now what's going on is they're doing these amazing small semi-surprise for charity tours. They're posting a ton of video on their YouTube channel, which is sometimes the entire show that they're playing in clubs. Sound amazing, look amazing. The new music is great. More importantly, I flipped you guys an interview that they did on Q, which is a big radio station up here in Canada, that Lars did. It was like a sort of 40-minute thing. And if ever I was sort of blown away by what Lars has said, and that doesn't happen often, I felt that the entire band is really humbled. They look and feel gracious. They look like they really want to connect with the fans. My favorite thing that they've been doing is I think they released a video for literally every single song.
Well, actually, I want to talk to you about that, because isn't that the smartest move? Because you know that fans were going to upload the songs to YouTube and then they'd spend all their time doing this copyright control stuff, whereas now you've got the video. So if you're a fan and you want to hear the song, you don't have to go to Joe Smith, who uploaded some crappy MP3. You get the band's video, and of course you can monetize all that stuff. So when you start getting into millions of views for all these videos, suddenly your 18 songs is bank, right?
What Lars said in that interview on Q about Napster, I thought was so interesting too. His side was, listen, it wasn't a question of Metallica's too much money and they're being crazy. He was like, if we want to give away our music free, we just want it to be our choice, not someone else's. We're happy to support our fans, and they have throughout the years. And boy, I'll tell you, if Hardwired to Self-Destruct demonstrates anything to me, being a fan from basically day one and being somewhat on the fence about the Napster thing, because what I do professionally, I really think that this album, being new music, being heavy, being, you know, the four guys with Rob Trujillo, and all the stuff they're doing is totally making amends for any arrears we might have thought that this band.
No. They still owe me an apology for Lulu. They still do.
I don't think they don't for me. Mark, how do you feel about what's been going on with Metallica? I'm just so jammed about this.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting time for Metallica. The album, it's just, you know, the first three singles I thought were great. There's like a handful of other songs on the record that I thought were great on the first listen, and I keep listening to it. And the other songs have been like slow grow songs on me. Where at first I was like, it's, you know, so. But now that I'm into it, it's been a couple, two, 3 weeks now. I'm really feeling these songs, and I do think it's a special record. Just on the record specifically, I've heard, I think it was Lars say, you know, we're going back to our Kill 'Em All roots and stuff. I personally don't hear that whatsoever. What I hear is an album that is probably closer to the same sound. And I'm not talking about Inner Sandman. I'm talking about some of the other songs, like a Sad But True but type of vibe. I think it's closer in production style and songwriting to the Black album than any of the other things. And maybe that's not the cool thing for the guys in the band to say, since that's their most popular album. But I really think, and that's that's not a problem for me. And I didn't finish my thought. What I really think is it's very close to the Black record, the Black album, and that's a good thing. And no, there's not a commercial song like Enter Sandman or The Unforgiven or something like that. But listen to some of the other tracks on Black album and compare them to the Hardwired tracks. And there's pretty similar vibe in musicianship, in the way Hetfield is singing, in the production value.
Yeah, I call it more like a bloated Black album. I think, you know, for sure this album's going to be in my top three of 2016. I just wish they had trimmed a little bit of the fat on some of these songs. You know, some of them are 7-8 minutes long. If you got them down to 4.5, 5, I think you would have had a slamming album. That said, though, it's still top three for me of 2016.
And two other pieces of it that I want to jump on before we wrap up our love for Metallica. One is Hetfield's riffs are just unbelievable. And it really comes through for me when you watch these YouTube videos and how they're constructing the songs. And there's a lot of videos like that up there. Just the way he sounds and the way he's thinking about making the pieces put together. Just in my sort of world, I always knew James Hetfield was one of those riff gods, but this one just really hammered it home. The other thing, you know, Mitchell Fahn talked earlier about the videos and how smart it was. So this way you're not just sort of looking at a bad MP3 with like an image of Metallica, but rather able to hear it in all its glory. The song Murder One, just a video, everybody's has got to go watch this. It's a tribute to Lemmy. It's fully animated. It is fantastic. One of the coolest things I've seen, forget about Metallica, probably in hard rock and heavy metal this year. So definitely check it out on YouTube, Murder One animation tribute to Lemmy. It's absolutely great. Before we get into our picks of the week, I feel like now we're moving downstream a little bit, but I think it's just one of those crazy stories where the three of us wind up texting behind the scenes, somewhat giggling, somewhat sad. But this whole LA Guns thing is kind of absurd to me. We have Phil Lewis, and who's a singer, and Tracy Guns, who were sort of like separated and back together and separated. And Phil Lewis was in one version of LA Guns. And Mitch Lafon, you're going to have to come in here and correct me if I'm wrong, with the original drummer or one of the earlier drummers, Steve Riley. And what, Tracy Guns was in another version? Mitch, Phil Lewis quit LA Guns to join the other LA Guns. It's ridiculous as far as I can hear. But Mitch, clear it up for us.
Yeah, it's completely and utter ridiculous. I call this, you know, sort of a marketing angle gone wrong. Phil Lewis goes on the internet on Facebook and says, I have quit LA Guns. I'm moving on to these new challenges. Giggle, giggle, giggle. You know, Tracy Guns writes on the Facebook, hey, buddy, you know, whatever. And then Frontier Records, who have this Phil and Tracy album coming out in January, say, no worries, folks. He only left that LA Guns to join this LA Guns. And now he's on his Facebook today saying, yes, 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 it's me and Tracy all the way. I've only left the Steve Riley version of LA. It is completely and utterly ridiculous. It was some kind of cute marketing angle where it was going to get some press, and then they were going to reveal, I'm still in this LA Guns. And instead, it's just caused incredible confusion with the fan base. It's silly. So he basically left the LA Guns that he had a name, you know, stake in, to join Tracy Guns of LA Guns band and transform that into the Phil and Tracy LA Guns, because it's now officially called Phil and Tracy's LA Gun. It's stupid. I mean, if you want to throw Steve Riley out of the band, throw him out of the band, but don't quit your band to join your band. That's bull.
The other thing that's so weird to me that I think is the most weird is, even if you cycle back to when LA Guns was emerging as a relevant, iconic part of 80s metal, let's call it hard rock, I'd even make the argument that they never really even ascended. This wasn't a band that was able to headline arenas. I mean, they were getting close when they had the Ballad of Jane, and it never really tipped for them. So what makes it absurd to me is that it's like this repetitive story that keeps coming out about a band that, you know, and again, I'm not trying to insult them. I actually like Sex Action and a lot of this stuff on many of the albums, but I'm just sort of shaking my head. Like, my whole joke is, this is very serious, gentlemen. There's hundreds of dollars at stake here. I mean, this isn't like a band that's like clamoring in these venues that are being offered. And I'm not trying to belittle them. And I'm a fan. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm berating a band in particular. Just, it's all absurd to me. Mark, were you a fan of the band?
I was never a fan of them. Never cared for the band. And the only thing I know, Steve Riley was once a part of Wasp, who I was really a big fan. And
yeah, me too.
So that was really my only interest in LA Guns. But I could literally probably not name three of their songs. That's how out of the LA Guns loop I am.
Yeah, you see, I love the band, and I actually put out three of their albums. I was behind LA Guns Wasted, the EP. I was behind the Phil Lewis More Purple Than Black album. I was behind the Tracy Guns Killing Machine album. Wait, so I've had a relationship with them. We've done all kinds of stuff. But this just struck me as being disingenuous and, well, basically stupid. It is a stupid marketing ploy that, you know, in one way, I sort of hope it backfires on them just to show them that it was stupid. But on the other hand, I'm a fan. I want the album to be successful. I want them to tour. I love Tracy. I love Phil. I have no animosity towards them. But Jesus Christ, boys, you know, hire a better manager or something. I don't know what that was.
And the reality of the situation is that I saw the band fairly recently opening up for the non-original lineup of Dokken in Fort Lauderdale in a club, and, you know, no offense to either band, as long as it was sold out, people were clamoring to see the. So it's also like, what are you ultimately fighting for? And, you know, again, hate to end on a bit of a bummer, but I saw that and I just sort of was like laughing and quizzical all at the same time. So again, we sort of descended from Guns N' Roses, Metallica down to LA Guns. So maybe we can ascend right now by talking about some of the music that is rocking the earbuds.
No rat for you today? No, we're not going to go into rat.
I figured we can hold the rat discussion for another. I think it's similar to the LA Gun story. So we'll hold it. It's almost like redundant at this point. There's six versions of rat touring here. It's like,
what we'll do is we'll just edit what I just said, and every time we say LA Guns, just Mark will just put in rat. And
yeah, because it's basically the same story at that point. You're right.
Except the only difference with rat is I freaking love rat. So,
well, me too. That's the other thing too, is you sort of like don't care as much when it's a band that you actually want to see, which is
very excited to hear that Rat is back together with three of the original members. But yeah, we can
Steve
talk about
Pearson,
that another
Warren DeMartini, Juan Cruz, yeah. Also Carlos Cavazo from Quiet Riot is going to be playing again.
Yes, added bonus.
And we'll see who's on drums, but that is a tour that is coming our way.
I think it's Mitch
from Y&T. Wasn't it the guy from Y&T?
You know, there was all kinds. There was Jimmy DeGrasso, and then there was Greg D'Angelo, but I'm not sure. So it seems to sort of be up in the air. They just put out a logo today, which they sent to me and I sent out, and it only mentions the four names, no drummer on that logo. So we'll see. We'll see.
Mark, what have you been listening to?
Well, thanks to you, I think, Mitch Joel, the Testament record, which I think you suggested maybe the last episode. Oh, wow. Well, how great is that? Brotherhood of the Snake. So good. And, you know, we're talking about how great the Metallica album is, but this is pretty close. I mean, if not, I don't know. Sometimes I was actually scratching my head thinking, is it better than the new Metallica? The songwriting amazing, the guitar playing amazing, and just a full-out assault, but some nice kind of melody things happening too, which you really maybe haven't gotten much from Testament along those lines in the past. It's a great, great record. Let's see, what else was I listening to that I think Mitch suggested? The
Tigers of Pantang.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, Tigers of Pantang.
Isn't that a great album? That's a killer album, the new Tigers. You know,
self-titled, I believe, right?
Yep.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, so good. So well, the songwriting is just great. I just love some of those old school, like new wave of British heavy metal riffs that they still pull out. How, you know, I wouldn't say it has a modern twist on it because its roots are still entrenched in that sound, but it's progressed maybe a little bit past the new wave of British heavy metal sound in a good way. It's just a great, great listen. Flotsam and Jetsam have a new self-titled record out, which is also very good, and I'm really digging deep into that one now, and I'm really digging that one.
All right, Mitch, what have you been checking out?
You know what? I have gone down the Tigers of Pantang rabbit hole. So I started off with the new album, and then I pulled out the stuff from 85, Wreckage, and then the Big Game Hunting, which is a rarities collection that was put out a few years ago with all kinds of B-sides and demos. And, of course, Spellbound, because John Sykes plays guitar on it. You know, John, of course, with Whitesnake and Thin Lizzy. So it's just been an entire rabbit hole jump of whatever, there are 10 or 12 albums and compilations and live and nonstop Tigers for the last couple of weeks. So there you go. Maybe I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I'm loving every minute of it. And that new album was the Kickstarter for that. It's just that much fun that it brought back, like, let's go, folks. Let's go back to 1981. Let's do this.
And I think it's great if you can find a new album from a band like that and it takes you back. I got to tell you, like, a band that does that to me very often is Deep Purple. And I've said for years, I think that they're one of the few bands, and hopefully they will be inducted this year into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, that even their later albums are they're written with respect and passion for their age and what they're trying to do. And whenever I hear something new from them, I wind up going all the way back to the 70s, so much I can totally appreciate where you're coming from.
Yeah, and yeah, they're in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, are they in?
Yeah,
last
in,
year.
Definitely.
Oh, was it last year? Okay, but I thought last for some year, reason yeah. I saw news that it was going to be this. I don't know.
No. What you saw was that they announced a farewell tour, and they said most of the press releases I saw said, coming on the heels of their Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, blah, blah, blah. They're going on a farewell tour. So maybe you're
well deserved. Oh, no, that's true. I knew that because I've heard all the Glenn Hughes interviews. That's true. I'm stupid. That's right. All right. For me, it's definitely been two bands we've already talked about. One is Metallica, Hardwired to Self-Destruct. I just feel it, every single video clip or interview I see flips me back to just hit and play on it. And because it is so long, and this is where I'll probably disagree a little bit with Mitch Lafon, I don't know, I guess it's occupying more of my airspace, and I'm just getting more and more into it as I get deeper and deeper. Second, I'm totally with you, Mark, and I know I mentioned it last time, and I'm glad you texted me and said you're loving it, but Testament, Brotherhood of the Snake, I just cannot believe a band that is that band since they've come out. And, you know, again, the melodies for me were almost like there's some strange stuff happening in Practice What You Preach that sort of came out here in Brotherhood of the Snake. Couldn't be happier for them. I just hope they find the audience that they really rightfully deserve. Their band that always just sort of fell below the big four or five. And I feel like they really, especially with a guy like Alex Skolnick on guitar, they just deserve to be up there. And the third one is a newer band called Of Mice and Men. The album's called Cold World, produced by a old friend of mine, David Bendeth, who used to head up A&R up here in Canada at BMG, moved to the States, very well-known producer. If you check him out, you'll see he's done a lot of great albums. I just really love it. Of Mice and Men, feel like it's new, it's fresh, it's different, definitely super heavy. Those are my three. I've been really enjoying those three a lot, so it's been a good couple weeks. Cool. I want to thank everybody for listening and checking us out. If you want to hear more about me, you can check me out at Mitch Joel on Twitter while that's still working. Also, check out Groove, the No Trouble podcast, which you can always find at notrouble.com/groove. Latest episode, I believe, is Rudy Sarzo, so that one's still up there. A brand new one coming out really soon. If it's not already out, it might be. And I've got some really heavier players coming up soon, so make sure to check that out. Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on at Talking Metal and where people can reach you?
Yeah, talkingmetal.com is the best place. We have all the social media pages linked through there. We have had a number of interviews happen lately. I'm actually a little stressed out because I just have so many in the can right now that I haven't put up. But we had an interesting conversation on the two episodes ago with Bob Nelbandian, who has a new documentary out, Inside Metal. It's the second edition of the Inside Metal documentaries, and it deals strictly with the LA metal scene. And we have a great discussion with him about that 80s LA metal scene. It's a really just awesome listen. He's not a big rock star, but if you are into hard rock and heavy metal history, you got to listen to that episode of Talking Metal. It's up online now on Spreaker, iTunes, and of course, talkingmetal.com.
Very cool. Mitch, what's been happening over at One-on-One, and where can people find you?
Well, you know, a lot of great interviews. I recently interviewed Bobby Blotzer of Rat, Phil Campbell of Motorhead, and Simon Kirk of course, Bad Company. So those are all coming up. You can find me, you know, with Mark on talkingmetal.com. All my interviews are up there, too. And if you want to find me on Twitter, it's at Mitch LaFon. Same thing at Instagram, except there's an underscore between the Mitch and the LaFon. And there you go. You know, just a lot of great interviews and a lot of great content coming up. So, yeah, just wait till you hear Bobby Blotzer. It was a great one-hour chat, and he talks about all the legal issues with the band and his band and the other band. And it's probably going to get a lot of people in a lot of trouble, but what are you going to do?
And I just realized I completely screwed up. I'm actually on episode number 24 of Groove, the No Trouble podcast. And this one's with Doug Wimbish, who's the famous for being in Living Color, toured with Joe Satriani. Also, it marks the two-year anniversary of that show, because I only do it every single month, but that's still real proud that it's been 2 years and growing every month, which is very cool. So everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for checking out Metal Raps number 35. As always, we'll be back somewhat infrequently, but hopefully soon with episode number 36 of Metal Raps, and we'll see you soon.